Here are all the John Lothian News daily updates from the week of September 14th, 2020. Enjoy.
This is John Lothian with the commentary and stories from the first read section of the John Lothian newsletter for September 14th, 2020. JLN's Suzanne Cosgrove has penned a story titled, Illinois Social Equity License Applicants Get Their Day in Court. The story begins with, controversy over the application process for the state of Illinois' 75 social equity licenses to open cannabis dispensaries found its way into court on Friday and is expected to be given a full hearing next Thursday, September 17th. U.S. District Court Judge George L. Alonzo heard preliminary arguments Friday from both sides of a lawsuit that was filed on behalf of 21 plaintiffs, applicants that did not make the final cut to win the licenses. To read the rest of this report, go to johnlothiannews.com. There's also a podcast version of the story on johnlothiannews.com as well. Here are the comments from the hits and takes section of today's JLN. NASDAQ is holding a discussion titled The Evolution of Retail Investing and Related Obligations today at noon Eastern Time. Speakers are Phil McIntosh, Chief Economist of NASDAQ, Jerry Walsh, the Senior Vice President of Investor Education at FINRA, Lori Schock, Head of the Office of Investor Education and Advocacy at the SEC, Ken Benson, CEO of SIFMA, and Joe J.J. Kinahan, Managing Director and Chief Strategist, TD Ameritrade. Registration details are in today's JLN on johnlothiannews.com. The Financial Times has a special report about exchange-traded funds. Here are some of the headlines from the report. Investors salve pandemic wounds with gold in flight to safety. How to best invest for Brexit. U.S.-China trade war hits passive investors. Subscale markets coming of age push growth in Asia. Gold rush points to structural shift. Stock pickers fight back by modifying design of ETFs. ESG surges as investors search for better corporate citizens. You can find the link for the report on johnlothiannews.com or just go directly to ft.com. Brendan Kalb is now the general counsel of Exodus Point Capital Management LP in New York. Previously, he was a partner with Morgan Lewis and Bacchius LLP, and before that, general counsel of AQR Capital Management LLC. Phillips Futures has appointed Thayer Hussein as executive director. Previously, Hussein was sales director, overseeing global sales operations. On Friday, JLN announced the launch of a new MarketsWiki education video series, The Path to Electronic Trading. If you're interested in being part of the series, either as a session subject or advertisers, please contact me at johnlothian@johnlothian.com. Tom Thompson of JLN reports that Brad Rosen, JD, has a report on Jim Hamilton's blog detailing a panel discussion hosted by the Bipartisan Policy Center on climate risks in the financial market. The conversation featured Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, Representative Garrett Graves, a Republican from Louisiana, CFTC Commissioner Rostin Benham, and Bob Litterman, chair of the CFTC's Climate-Related Market Risk Advisory Subcommittee. The web-based discussion followed the CFTC's recent report, Managing Climate Risk in the U.S. Financial System. Jason Grummet, Bipartisan Policy Center president, moderated the discussion. The title for this week's The Spread is SoftBank's Hard Knocks. This week and last week on The Spread, regulators published their takes on global warming. SoftBank gets in deep while Robinhood adds guardrails and more. Here are some more stories from the first read section of JLN. The Financial Times has an article titled, Not Enough COVID Vaccine for All Until 2024, says biggest producer. Serum Institute warns that companies are not increasing production capacity quickly enough. The chief executive of the world's largest vaccine manufacturer has warned that not enough COVID-19 vaccines will be available for everyone in the world to be inoculated until the end of 2024 at the earliest. Adar Poonawalla, chief executive of Serum Institute of India, told the Financial Times that pharmaceutical companies are not increasing production capacity enough to vaccinate the global population in less time. The CFTC issued a press release on Friday with the SEC about a New York Ponzi scheme. The title for the press release is "Victims of New York Ponzi Scheme Recover Over $1 Billion Following CFTC Enforcement Action." The Commodity Futures Trading Commission today announced that pursuant to an order entered on Monday, August 24, 2020, by the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York, the court-appointed receiver has completed a final distribution to victims of a $1.3 billion Ponzi scheme brought by the CFTC in 2009. Specifically, the distribution pertains to customers in a commodity pool operated by the defendants Paul Greenwood and Stephen Walsh, who, among other defendants, were charged in the case. The court-appointed receiver for this matter was Rob Evans and Associates. The press release goes on to report, the assets marshaled in the case include over $88 million in funds clawed back from fully redeemed customers, a $14 million horse farm in North Salem, New York, a collection of antique teddy bears sold at auction at Christie's for over $3.7 million, and an estate in Sands Point, New York. I never thought I would see a collection of antique teddy bears mentioned in a press release from the CFTC. The Financial Times also has a story about the recent Liberal Democratic Party elections in Japan that was won by Yoshihide Suga. Yoshihide Suga wins landslide in Japanese leadership contest. Shinzo Abe's closest ally set to become next prime minister after winning LDP race. Yoshihide Suga will be the next prime minister of Japan after winning a landslide victory in the elections that led to a ruling Liberal Democratic Party. The 71-year-old, who has been at the center of Japan's government as chief cabinet secretary for the past 8 years, will replace Shinzo Abe, who is stepping down because of health reasons. Here are the top read stories from Friday's John Lothian newsletter. The top story Friday was our announcement. John Lothian News announces the Path to Electronic Trading video series. Second was JLN's Jerry Corcoran. One day of working on the floor of the CBOT started a path to electronic trading. Third was Fauci says U.S. needs to, quote, hunker down, unquote, for fall and winter, from NBC News. This is John Lothian with the commentary and stories from the first read section of the John Lothian newsletter for September 15th, 2020. Today, Suzanne Cosgrove has a story in the newsletter titled, "New Retail Interest Spurs Renewed Focus on Investor Education." The story starts like this. Equity markets are seeing an influx of new retail interest, with up to 25% of the market activity executed by retail investors on peak days this year, compared with about 10% in 2019, said John Zika, NASDAQ's Executive Vice President and Chief Legal and Regulatory Officer. The trend is pushing market professionals and regulators to look at comprehensive ways to educate and protect novice market entrants. During this time, we have seen some challenging questions, including about complex investments like inverse exchange-traded funds, ETFs, and options leverage accounts, said Lori Schock, head of the SEC's Office of Investor Education and Advocacy. We're a disclosure-based system in the U.S., she said. We need people to read and understand it. You need to do your homework. Schock was among the half dozen panelists who examined the retail trend Monday in a NASDAQ-sponsored webinar titled The Evolution of Retail Investing and Related Obligations. To read the rest of the story, go to johnlothiannews.com. Here are the comments from the hits and takes section of today's JLN. Mohamed Bourouissa, a French-Algerian artist, was awarded the Deutsche Börse Photography Foundation Prize for 2020 for the exhibition Free Trade. Bourouissa, born in 1978, was awarded the prestigious prize worth 30,000 British pounds on Monday, September 14th. The announcement was made during an online presentation by the Photographers Gallery in London. Today, the FT has a special report about Luxembourg as a financial center. Luxembourg is amongst the biggest winners from Brexit as businesses shift operations out of the UK. The Grand Duchy has built on its strengths in private banking, investing, insurance, and corporate lending developed over the past century. The stories from the special report have these headlines: Luxembourg among the biggest winners from Brexit. Luxembourg financial watchdog sharpens its teeth. Luxembourg post-pandemic stimulus should be sustainable. Luxembourg tries to shed tax haven label. Luxembourg strengthens status as offshore renminbi center. Secure, green, and international. Why Luxembourg suits expatriates. Luxembourg's older investors turn to robo-advisors. Shake up at Luxembourg's Cater-owned Quintet Bank. The long-term stock exchange is open for business. It actually opened on September 10th in what I would describe as the softest of launches. David D.J. Cook will be joining West Monroe Partners after graduation as a full-time software engineering consultant out of their Seattle office. DJ is one of my Eagle Scouts who went to the World Scout Jamboree in Japan in 2015 with the help from the readers of this newsletter. Here are more stories from the first read section of JLN. From Bloomberg is a story, tracking unprecedented food crisis brought on by COVID-19. The world is hurtling towards an unprecedented hunger crisis. The pandemic is upending food supply chains, crippling economies, and eroding consumer purchasing power. In a worst-case scenario, about a tenth of the world's population won't have enough to eat. Some projections show that by the end of the year, more people will die each day from hunger than from COVID-19. In the U.S., we are lucky to have local food banks to help address the hunger crisis. But those food banks need your support. The Food Bank for Chicago is the Greater Chicago Food Bank. One of seven people in Chicago will experience food insecurity during 2020. September is Hunger Action Month. You can donate to the Greater Chicago Food Depository at www.chicagosfoodbank.org. Also, look for your local food bank. Also from Bloomberg, at JP Morgan, productivity falls for staff working at home. A troubling pattern emerged as most JP Morgan Chase's and company's employees worked from home to stem the spread of COVID-19. Productivity slipped. Work output was particularly affected on Mondays and Fridays, according to the findings discussed by Chief Executive Officer Jamie Dimon in a private meeting with Keefe, Bruyette, and Woods analysts. That, according with worries that remote work is no substitute for organic interaction, is part of why the biggest bank is urging more workers to return to offices over the coming weeks. Matt Rambel had this to say about the story. This may be the exception rather than the rule. According to a recent study published by Harvard Business Review, the productivity of knowledge workers, people whose jobs involve the use of specialized knowledge, which probably applies to most of JP Morgan's work-from-home employees, has actually increased during the pandemic. While some aspects of work life, including direct management methods, have become more difficult, the study found that knowledge workers seem to be more intrinsically motivated. The top three red stories from yesterday's JLN were, one, these five habits will help you stay focused all day. A psychologist explains why, from Inc.com. Second was MIAX joins challengers to dominant U.S. exchange operator, from the Financial Times. Third was the wildly popular trades behind the market swoon and surge, from the Wall Street Journal. This is John Lothian with the commentary and stories from the first read section of the John Lothian newsletter for September 16th, 2020. Today we have a story in JLN from Suzanne Cosgrove titled Blue Skies in Post-COVID World. Downside doesn't look as deep, Sakjen says. The story starts with this. One day the world will recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. But what will the recovery look like and when will it take place? Sakjen's Klaus Bader, global chief economist, and Sophie Hyun, cross-asset analyst from the French bank, tackled those questions in a webinar last week by outlining possible scenarios for 2020 and 2021, although they acknowledged that the outcome of the U.S. presidential election and prospects for a coronavirus vaccine remain unknowns. To date, activity has sprung back powerfully in many economic sectors from the collapse that took place amid COVID-related lockdowns. Bader said, putting the U.S. and much of Europe in what he characterized as a V-shaped recovery from the shock of the pandemic. The U.S. and Europe took similar hits in exports, he noted, but the Eurozone's recovery began sooner. However, the initial rebound was the easy part, Bader said. The hard part is keeping the expansion on course, and it will inevitably slow beyond the third quarter, he said. Growth will require continued fiscal and monetary policy support, as well as a sound balance between public health and economic concerns. To read the rest of the story, go to johnlothiannews.com. Here are the hit and take comments from the first read section of the John Lothian newsletter. The CFTC published a consent order of permanent injunction against Edge Financial Technologies, LLC, an Illinois firm that provided software development and computer programming services for traders. This is the Jitesh Thakkar case, except that he is not mentioned in the press release. That is because, thankfully, the CFTC dropped all the charges against him, but did get him to agree to the charges against his firm. See the story below and Tom Thompson's comments. The most interesting man in the world has agreed to become the most interesting Boy Scout fundraiser event chairman. Pat Kenny, senior vice president at CQG, chairman of the Association of Futures Markets, and village president of Fontana, Wisconsin, has agreed to serve as the chairman of the 2020 LaSalle Street Trading Tech Awards event for the Pathway to Adventure Council of the Boy Scouts of America. He is going with this all in his free time, now that his two daughters are married off this summer. Also, Kenny has been reelected to a second two-year term as chairman of the Association of Futures Markets. Peter Borish was interviewed by Gio Valiente on realvision.com about his advice for traders. Brendan Bradley has announced on LinkedIn that he is the co-author of the FinTech for Dummies, the Ultimate FinTech Guide. ICE announced a record trading volume for their physically delivered Bakkt Bitcoin futures contracts. Bakkt Bitcoin monthly futures traded a record 15,955 contracts on September 15, 2020, 36% more than the previous record of 11,706 contracts on July 28th of this year. NASDAQ's economic research team has a commentary titled, Switching to NASDAQ is good for your stock. My comment was, in other job-saving news, the Wall Street Journal has a story about the foods that will help you control your emotions during the pandemic. Deep dish pizza and beer were not on the list. The story is titled, Foods That Battle Stress During the Coronavirus Pandemic, Berries, Nuts, Olive Oil, How to Craft an Eating Plan to Help You Manage Your Emotions. Amazingly, that is what my diet has been made of since the last few months. Here's a comment from Tom Thompson. Testimony in the Justice Department's latest attempt to stamp out spoofing got underway Tuesday with two government witnesses. The case is USA versus Vorley and Chenu, both traders at Deutsche Bank. The CME representative, the prosecutor's first witness, instructed the court about the mechanics of futures markets, how deception is never allowed, and how you may only place orders that you want to be executed. The defense, however, got them to admit that a stop-loss order is always placed by a trader with the expectation and hope that it will not be filled. The second government witness was from the analysis group. They dazzled and confused with the help of market snapshots showing the individual defendants actual trading with orders on both sides of the market. Impressive as the testimony was, the defense extracted from the witness the fact that they couldn't say if any or how many other traders had similar trading activities, making it look like the government's case suffers from cherry picking. Vorley's attorney is Richard Burlingame, who represented Navander Sarau, a private trader who pleaded guilty to spoofing charges in 2016 and assisted the prosecution in its case against Jitesh Dikar last year. Finally, something to look forward to. Thompson Colborne and Exchange Analytics are bringing the annual Chicago Conference on Futures and Derivatives right to your laptop or computer on October 20th. More information on this annual fall highlight is available on JLN at johnlothiannews.com. And finally, more from Tom Thompson. The CFTC announced yesterday that it had squeezed a very unconvincing settlement out of Edge Financial. Having spent many hours reviewing testimony and evidence from the Justice Department's unsuccessful case against Jitesh Dikar, as well as conducting its own discovery, the CFTC dropped their case against him. They nonetheless proceeded against Edge, extracting less than $75,000 in penalties. Unchastened, the Division of Enforcement, wrapped up the whole mess by saying, quote, establishing that entities can be held civilly liable for aiding and abetting such illegal conduct as charged in this case of first impression strengthens the CFTC's enforcement mission. We will not hesitate to bring charges against entities and individuals for similar conduct in the future, unquote. Thompson goes on, I am certainly not a lawyer, but pressuring a defendant to settle a case after years of impoverishing litigation does not seem like a reasonable basis for establishing sweeping new law. Maybe the division should deliberate long and hard before it charges any more software developers and other vendors, even when it is piling on top of criminal charges. Here are some more stories from the first read section of the John Lothian newsletter from today. Here's the beginning of the press release about Edge Financial from the CFTC. Federal court orders Illinois software development firm to pay penalty and disgorgement for aiding and abetting illegal conduct. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission today announced the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois entered a consent order of permanent injunction against Edge Financial Technologies, LLC, an Illinois firm that provided software development and computer programming services for traders. This ruling resolves a 2018 enforcement action brought in connection with the Division of Enforcement Spoofing Task Force. The CFTC press release is available on their website, cftc.gov. Bloomberg reported that Bill Gates Sr., father of Microsoft's co-founder, has died at the age of 94. He was a lawyer who helped guide his son's philanthropic foundation. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is the world's largest. William H. Gates Sr., a lawyer raised in the Great Depression who helped his son give away an immense fortune, has died. He was 94. He died Monday at his beach home in Hood Canal, Washington, according to Bill Gates III's family office. The cause was Alzheimer's disease. Bloomberg also has a story. Kosher crisis hits $19 billion market with rabbis stuck at home. To certify food, much of which originates in China, factory inspections are going virtual. In an ordinary year, Rabbi David Moskowitz would have spent weeks before Rosh Hashanah, the holiday that celebrates the start of the Jewish New Year, working in China. For more than a decade, the native of New York's Rockland County has run Schatz Kosher Services, which verifies that ingredients made in China factories don't contain pork or otherwise violate Jewish dietary laws. Late summer is usually a busy season, with companies gearing up to make products for their Passover for the following spring. Here were the three most read stories from yesterday's JLN. The first one was a repeat from the top story Monday. These five habits will help you stay focused all day. A psychologist explains why, from Inc.com. Second was Bloomberg's, at JP Morgan, productivity falls for staffs working at home. Third was Mohamed Bourassia wins the Deutsche Börse Photography Foundation Prize 2020 from Deutsche Börse, celebrating the French-Algerian artist who won the prize for his project Free Trade. This is John Lothian with the commentary and stories from the first read section of the John Lothian newsletter for September 17th, 2020. Tom Thompson has a story leading off JLN today titled Fed Star Witness in Spoofing Trial Gets Tarnished Under Cross-Examination. Here's the beginning of Tom's story. Another day of methodical testimony unfolded in Judge John Tharp's federal courtroom on Wednesday, the second day of testimony in the case of the Department of Justice versus James Vorley, Cedric Chenu. The defendants in the criminal case, who worked together trading precious metals at Deutsche Bank, are charged with wire fraud. They allegedly spoofed the gold and silver futures markets on COMEX. Vorley and Chenu were not charged with spoofing per se because some of the charges stem from activities from before Dodd-Frank became fully into force in 2011. Otherwise, the proceedings, which first got underway with jury selection on Monday, look and sound like a spoofing trial. The trial is being held in the Dirksen Federal Building with COVID-19 precautions. The trial takes up the entire courtroom to accommodate social distancing. Everyone wears masks, and the press and the public in a nearby courtroom watch the proceedings on screens. On Wednesday, David Liu, another Deutsche Bank alumni and the most junior of the three Deutsche Bank traders who were charged with spoofing, spent the whole day in the witness stand. Liu, who worked for Deutsche Bank in Singapore, is a witness for the prosecution. To read the rest of the commentary, go to johnlothiannews.com. Here are some of the comments from the hits and takes section of today's JLN. It is Deutsche Börse's turn to buy a majority interest in one of our sponsors, this time Quantitative Brokers. I think the lesson here is if you want to sell your firm, become a sponsor of JLN. Hint, hint. Ask for our special Sell Your Firm sponsorship deal. According to Tom Asher, QB, as Quantitative Brokers is known for short, was having a town hall meeting to explain the deal to their employees this morning. This is an opportunity for QB to accelerate its growth, leveraging assets from Deutsche Börse Group while maintaining QB as a separate company. The founders of the company will continue to run it. Tom Asher continues as executive chairman. QB is continuing to add new exchanges and venues and supporting more multi-EMS/OMS. They will continue to be an FCM broker-neutral value proposition. The NFA's quarterly board update is out. This is the second time we have had no video of people, but rather words and images with powerful music to tell the story. Rosenblatt is holding its 13th annual Global Exchange Leader Conference virtually this year, as is the way of the world. The event is invitation only, but you can register at a URL on their website and ask for an invitation. The event includes no press, so the speakers are pretty relaxed about what they can share. There was a time, though, when this journalist would attend the in-person version of the conference and even moderate a panel. Former CFTC Chairman J. Christopher Giancarlo had a commentary published in the U.S. Today Network titled, "New Jersey Can't Justify Financial Transaction Tax." You can now register to become a member of the Materials Exchange. Go to materialsexchange.com. Here's a comment from Suzanne Cosgrove in JLN. The exchange behemoth CME Group offered few surprises but several highlights in a Wednesday presentation to Barclays Global Financial Services Conference. Notable points included a 12% increase in its metals complex year-over-year growth through September 11, 2020, a growth rate second only to CME equities products, which saw average daily volume rise 66% in the same period. Total exchange average daily volume was up 2% versus 2019 year-to-date, with agricultural commodities and interest rate products the lagging asset classes, down 10% and 19% respectively. A flat interest rate environment continued to weigh on rate volatility and volume, said Sean Tully, CME Global Head of Financial and OTC Products, said the record Treasury issuance projected through 2020, the result of high U.S. budget deficits, should increase demand for related hedging and risk management vehicles. Here's another comment from Suzanne. A status hearing in South Shore Restore versus Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, Brett Bender, Deputy Director, originally scheduled for today, September 17th, has been moved to Tuesday, September 22nd. As JLN reported previously, the case is related to the state's awarding of social equity licenses for 75 new cannabis dispensaries. Other stories from the first read section of JLN include a Bloomberg story titled "Citigroup Employee Who Operated QAnon Website on Leave. Popular Aggregator Site Shut Down After Jason Galinas Outed. QMAP Promoted the Conspiracy, Had Millions of Visitors." Jason Galinas, an employee at Citigroup, Inc., has been placed on paid leave pending an internal investigation after he was identified as the operator of the most prominent website dedicated to the QAnon conspiracy theory, according to three people familiar with the matter. Galinas, who lives in New Jersey, was identified September 10th as the operator of the website QMAP.pub and its associated mobile apps by the fact-checking site Logically.ai. Since then, the website has shut down and now simply provides a link to alternative websites offering information on the QAnon conspiracy. My comment is, I get the feeling Mr. Jalinas is regretting some of his decisions. Bloomberg also has a story titled, "The U.S. is no longer a land of opportunity for foreign MBA students. The pandemic and visa insecurity make U.S. programs less desirable. A deadly virus and tight visa rules have foreign business students second-guessing their choice of the U.S., leery of paying full tuition only to miss out on the networking opportunities and jobs that have made America the ultimate destination for an MBA. Foreign students have been a boon to business schools. The vast majority pay full freight, which can be more than $80,000 annually for a two-year program. International students account for almost half of Columbia's entering class this year." The Wall Street Journal also reported about the Snowflake IPO, Snowflake Stock, what you need to know about tech's hottest IPO. Data managing firm's strong revenue growth and well-known backers have helped make it the biggest tech IPO of the year. Snowflake Inc., the symbol is Snow, has become Silicon Valley's hottest new public company. Here's what you need to know about it. What is Snowflake? San Mateo, California-based Snowflake was founded in 2012 to help companies manage data they store on the cloud. The remote servers and software services provided by the likes of Amazon.com Inc. and Microsoft Corp. that firms use to store and process vast amounts of information. Snowflake works with companies such as Capital One Financial Corp. and video game maker Electronic Arts to help them manage and analyze their data. Snowflake, in its filing to go public, said it was vying for a market valued north of $80 billion. The Wall Street Journal also reported that Deutsche Bank tells U.S. staff they can wait until mid-2020 to return to the office. Lenders plan contrast with J.P. Morgan, which recently told many staff that they need to return to the office next week. Deutsche Bank AG told its U.S. employees they don't have to return to the office until July 2021. In a town hall Wednesday, America's chief of staff, Matthias Krauss, outlined the bank's plans for around bringing employees back to work. Many employees had asked for a clear policy as they deal with unknowns about school reopenings and the path of the coronavirus. NBC News reports almost 60% of business closures are now permanent. New Yelp data shows. Yelp on Wednesday released its latest economic average report revealing business closures across the U.S. are increasing as a result of the coronavirus pandemic's economic toll. As of August 31st, 163,735 businesses have indicated on Yelp that they have closed, a 23% increase since mid-July. Yelp also measures businesses whose closures have become permanent. That number has steadily increased over the past 6 months, now reaching 97,966, representing 60% of the closed businesses won't be reopening. The NFA board update mentioned earlier includes information about NFA's diversity and inclusion webpage, rule submission letter, proposed amendments to code of arbitration and member arbitration rules, rule submission letter, proposed amendments to NFA interpretive notice 9053, Forex transactions, notice to members, effective date for updated interpretive notice regarding the supervision of branch offices and guaranteed IBs, COVID webpage. Here were the top three red stories from yesterday's JLN. The most read story was Bloomberg's My Trip Down the Crypto Rabbit Hole in Search of DAO Hacker, an excerpt from a new book by Bloomberg reporter Matt Leising. Second was, What J.P. Morgan Has to Say About Young Employees Working from Home, from Yahoo Finance. Turn out it's, You whippersnappers, get off my lawn! Third was a repeat from Tuesday's top three, These Five Habits Will Help You Stay Focused All Day, a Psychologist Explains Why, from Inc.com. This is John Lothian with the commentary and stories from the first read section and the headlines from the lead section of the John Lothian newsletter for September 18th, 2020. Today's John Lothian newsletter leads off with a story from Suzanne Cosgrove titled, New FTSE Russell Data Model Looks for Green in Global Investments. Here is the beginning of the story. Ahead of the implementation of an ambitious EU classification system for sustainable activities, known as the EU taxonomy, FTSE Russell this week launched a Green Revenues 2.0 model to classify the green revenue exposure of global listed companies, a segment of the economy that FTSE Russell estimates is worth approximately $4 trillion. a final taxonomy report published by the EU Technical Expert Group on Sustainable Finance in March 2020 set out detailed criteria for 70 economic activities that contribute to climate change mitigation and 68 to adaptation activities. Some 6,000 large EU companies are subject to the EU's non-financial reporting directive and will be required to disclose if their activities are taxonomy aligned and to what extent by January 2020. The entire initiative, quote, is an important component of ESG, environmental, social, governance, investing, unquote, said Arne Stahl, global head of research and product management for FTSE Russell. We are seeing strong interest in Europe and growing interest in the U.S., he said in an interview. To read the rest of the story, go to johnlothiannews.com. Here are the headlines from today's lead section of JLN by the FT, Bloomberg, CNN, Reuters, and the New York Times. First, the top three stories from the FT. LSE in exclusive talks with Euronext over Borsa Italiana sale. Discussions come as London Exchange Group seeks regulatory approval for Refinitiv deal. From Bloomberg. Istanbul Bourse steps up punishments for misleading commentary, quote-unquote. From Bloomberg is, even Fidelity's $230 billion star manager has Robinhood anxiety. Here are the rest of the stories from the lead section of the John Lothian newsletter. Here's more from Bloomberg. Option dealers push prices to extremes in day trader onslaught. Stock traders brace for quadruple witching amid options anxiety. Ending China's chokehold on rare earths minerals, the U.S. and allies can break Beijing's monopoly on elements vital to electronics and national defense. DOJ indicts Chinese hackers for break-ins at 100 companies. LSE chooses Euronext Italian banks for Milan Bourse talks. Turkey suspends UBS's direct market access on Turkcell's slump. In time of pandemic, auction houses can cash in big on watches. Online auctions are breaking records, and their fastest growing audience is wristwatch enthusiasts. Worst shipping crisis in decades put lives and trade at risk, with 300,000 workers stranded on merchant ships. Bloomberg found dozens of labor violations that threaten seafarers' safety, as well as global supply chain. Are stocks losing some of their liquidity momentum? The effect of Fed support may be fading with no second wind in sight from fundamentals and policies. Hedge funds can't possibly survive the Nasdaq whale. Why? With Masayoshi Son's big bets driving up the S&P, who needs professionals anymore? CME's first water futures are coming as U.S. West burns. Big U.S. storm landfalls this year are one shy of 1916 record. Goldman sends some traders home after New York COVID case. From the Wall Street Journal, Fed details new round of big bank stress tests. The tests will provide more information on the resiliency of large banks when it comes to lending during the downturn. Steve Cohen's .72 settles with female employee in gender discrimination arbitration. Lauren Bonner had sued the firm in 2018, alleging unfair pay practices, sexist work environment. Philosophy for a time of crisis, from Socrates to Camus. Thinkers have asked how to respond when adversity turns our lives upside down. From CNN Business, U.S. will ban WeChat and TikTok downloads on Sunday. More from the Financial Times. London Stock Exchange eyes sale of Italian unit to help secure Refinitiv approval. LSE enters talks toward a sale as it tries to complete its $15 billion acquisition of Refinitiv amid antitrust concerns. City Sheriff Chris Woolard rides off. Interim boss of FCA has one last duty before riding into the sunset. From Reuters, Goldman holds top rank in activism defense. Spotlight climbs data. From the New York Times, Trump is wrong about TikTok. China's plans are much more sinister. The West still does not understand the scale of Beijing's soft power ambitions. Here are the comments from the Hits and Takes section of today's JLN. Our friends at CQG have upgraded their sponsorship level of JLN, thank you. And as part of the deal, they are a sponsor for the first 5 videos in the Path to Electronic Trading series. We have added a CQG sponsor notice to the Jerry Corcoran video with which we launched the series. The second video in the series, which we will publish later today and will be in the weekend update, is an interview with Dan Gramza, who will talk about his experience helping SGX transition from open outcry trading to electronic trading. Also, we have developed a logo for the series, which is shown here in the Jerry Corcoran video. Brian Mehta, the CMO of Trading Technologies, has a podcast titled Transforming How Futures Are Traded. See the John Lothian newsletter on johnlothiannews.com for the link. Aris X has made 2 promotions. Tony Acuna Roeder has been promoted to Chief Technology Officer. He joined Aris X in February 2018 as Head of Technology. John Denza has been promoted to Chief Commercial Officer. Denza joined Aris X in January 2019 as a Business Development Executive. It should be noted that Aris X has 2 open positions in technology, an Application Security Engineer and a Software Engineer Full Stack. See the career sections of their www.arisx.com/about/careers webpage for details. The Department of Justice announced Wednesday they had indicted 5 Chinese hackers and 2 Malaysian businessmen accused of intrusions that hit more than 100 companies in the U.S. and abroad. If you've not hardened your cybersecurity, now is a good time to do so. Yesterday was a better time to do so. Here are some comments from the JLN team. Tom Thompson offered this correction from his story yesterday. Correction, in my article about the spoofing trial involving former Deutsche Bank metals traders yesterday, I incorrectly said that jail time was off the table for cooperating witness Daniel Liu. Liu has pleaded guilty to 1 count of conspiring to spoof metals markets with Deutsche Bank colleagues, but has not been sentenced. The judge in Liu's case may, in fact, sentence him to prison up to the statutory maximum of 5 years, regardless of any sentencing recommendations from the prosecution in the case. The DOJ has agreed not to charge Liu for separately conspiring with a friend at UBS to spoof, and he cannot be sentenced to jail time for those crimes. But the judge in Liu's case may be aware of those other crimes and take them into account when sentencing Liu. Liu's potential for serving jail time engendered a lengthy discussion among the attorneys and the judge, who refused to allow the defense attorneys to let anyone to say that Liu had been granted immunity with respect to any criminal actions he may have engaged in. Here's Tom's update from the court case. Update from the USA versus Vorley et al. David Liu, the junior co-conspiring metals trader in the Deutsche Bank spoofing triad, spilled no new beans when his cross-examination continued Thursday in federal court. Wednesday, he was cross-examined by the attorney for James Vorley, and yesterday by Cedric Chanu's attorney. Chanu's defense covered much of the same ground as Vorley's attorney, with maybe a little bit more speed, since the landmarks were familiar, but getting to the same place. Liu was naive and ambitious, a dangerous combination in a place like Deutsche Bank. The foundation, as the trial attorneys call it, for the little smear of Germany's once great financial institution was laid by Liu's testimony about the lack of training and the total lack of trading ethics oversight he experienced in his years at the bank. Thursday's afternoon testimony by a senior fellow from compliance, who was called by the prosecution, buttressed the sorry impression left by Liu. For example, the prosecution's witness said that among the many hours of compliance training traders at the bank received was an annual mandatory hour on market manipulation. Their own documents entered as exhibits showed that in several years included in the excerpt from Vorley's personal file, he took only one training course on market participation. The course description that the training was supposed to take no more than half an hour, including the test. Neither Lou nor Deutsche Bank is on trial, but they both look guilty. Sarah Rudolph reported the London Metal Exchange will host a webinar on Tuesday, September 22nd to outline its approach to the role metals and mining play in the transition to a sustainable future. The webinar is free and will take place at 12 noon London time. The speakers will be Matthew Chamberlain, LME CEO, and Georgina Haylett, Chief Sustainability Officer. The webinar will be held on BrightTalk. You can go to www.lme.com to register today. Also, the deadline for feedback on LME's sustainability discussion paper, which you can download, is September 24th. Here are some more stories from the first read section of today's JLN. From Deutsche Börse, Supervisory Board of Deutsche Börse AG extends board memberships of Dr. Thomas Book and Dr. Stefan Leichner. In its meeting yesterday, the Supervisory Board of Deutsche Börse AG approved the management board mandates of Dr. Thomas Book and Dr. Stefan Leichner, extended early for 5 years until the end of June 2026. My comment, you can book another 5 years for Thomas Book at Deutsche Börse and Stefan Leichner too. Congratulations to both. From the Wall Street Journal, CDC testing guidance was published against scientists' objections. A controversial guideline saying people without COVID-19 symptoms didn't need to get tested for the virus came from HHS officials and skipped the CDC's scientific review process. A heavily criticized recommendation from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention last month about who should be tested for the coronavirus was not written by the CDC scientists and was posted to the agency's website despite their serious objections, according to several people familiar with the matter, as well as internal documents obtained by the New York Times. My comment, do the scientists get to give political advice since the politicians are giving scientific advice? From the Financial Times editorial board, the slow death of big oil. The industry must reinvent itself to survive in a low-carbon era. Oil and gas companies used to measure their success by how good they were at finding new reserves. The unforgiving rule by which they were judged was the reserve replacement ratio, a metric of how successful a company was at replacing the oil and gas it extracted with new supplies. Today, that view is being turned upside down. Bernard Looney, chief executive at BP, believes the future lies in producing less hydrocarbons, not more. He wants BP to cut its production of oil and gas by 40% over the next decade. Also from the FT, Queen set for financial blow from coronavirus crisis. UK's monarch's estate warns of falls in rental income and property value. Having ripped through the high street and emptied offices, the pandemic is now threatening the Queen's coffers. The Crown Estate said on Friday that it expected the value of its property and its profits to be badly hit by the coronavirus crisis. We are under no illusions about the challenges we face, said Dan Labid, chief executive of the estate, which manages a sprawling property portfolio on behalf of the monarch, including shops and offices in central London, retail parks in other regions, and the seabed off the English, Welsh, and Northern Irish coastline. I see a royal GoFundMe campaign coming. In the quirkier side of news from CNN, Qantas 7-hour flight to nowhere sells out in 10 minutes. Pre-pandemic, many of us viewed flying simply as a method of getting from one destination to another as quickly as possible. But amid the restrictions, travelers have been daydreaming not only about far-flung destinations, but the flying experience itself. From the thrill of the takeoff to the unmatched views of the Earth from the cabin window. That's where flights to nowhere come in, air travel that takes place purely for the purpose of the journey, not the destination. Jeff Bergstrom asked, what happens if you miss your flight? The Crypto Markets Wiki coin of the week is UNI. That doesn't stand for University of Northern Iowa. Decentralized DEX cryptocurrency exchange Uniswap launched its governance token, UNI, on September 16th, minting 1 billion digital coins to be distributed publicly over the next 4 years. According to Uniswap's blog, 60% of the coins will be distributed to users, while 21.51% will be reserved for team members and future employees. 17.8% will be reserved for investors, and 0.69% will be reserved for advisors. Uniswap made the news recently when a user copied its code wholesale to create SushiSwap. Here are the top three most read stories from yesterday's JLN. First from Thursday was John Lothian News, Fed star witness in spoofing trial gets tarnished under cross-examination, by Tom Thompson. Second was Deutsche Börse's press release. Deutsche Börse acquires a majority in Quantitative Brokers, thereby strengthening its strategic focus on the buy side. Third was what JP Morgan has to say about young employees working from home, from Yahoo Finance. The Markets Wiki stats for today are 188,234,189 pages viewed, with 24,431 pages on the site and 226,043 edits. Have a great day, have a great weekend, and stay safe and treat people the same way you want to be treated, with respect, equality, and justice. This has been John Lothian. Goodbye.